Hey, welcome in. Bubba Carpenter here in studio. We'll talk about the Georgia series today. I want to tell you, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. Also brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. Also brought to you by Southern Loft. They believe your home should reflect your unique personality. That's why they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room, a sleek dining table for your kitchen, they've got just what you need. When you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you, visit Southern Loft, 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville, or call 479-856-6100. Arkansas lost the series to Georgia. Of course, everybody's going to want to talk about game three, 26-14 in the final game. You know, it reminded me, Bubba, a lot of the South Carolina series where you've got one game that really gets away. Now, I think it played out a lot differently than South Carolina because Arkansas had their big inning against South Carolina that, you know, put the game away in like the fourth.
Yeah.
And they were up big at that point anyway. Georgia had it in the ninth. I think it's easy to forget. It was a pretty competitive game up until the ninth inning when Georgia just went crazy. But it's easy to, like, forget how competitive a series is when you have one result like that. Like, you go back to South Carolina. Arkansas beat them really bad in game one. South Carolina probably should have won the series. I mean, they had the ninth inning error. Arkansas wins that game, and then South Carolina wins game three. I thought with Georgia that it was a pretty, I don't know, pretty evenly matched series for, you know, up until the ninth inning of game three. Arkansas wins game one, a close game. Georgia wins game two, a close game. It's a close game, a competitive game, I guess. Yeah. It felt like Arkansas was playing catch up a lot on Saturday, but it's a competitive game up until things just go absolutely haywire in the ninth inning with some freshman pitchers. And it just felt like Sunday or Saturday. I'm going to call this Sunday probably the whole show with it being game three. I don't like these Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, although I do like having Sunday off.
Yeah.
It felt like it was just a confluence of a lot of bad things for Arkansas. And you and I were talking Saturday morning. We were expecting a lot of runs.
Yeah.
You get that kind of pitching. Both teams were, you know, toward the bottom of the barrel from a pitching standpoint. Neither of them, I think, are particularly deep in their bullpen. You get that kind of pitching with Georgia's bats especially and a wind that's blowing out about 15 to 25 miles an hour. That alone is going to get you a high-scoring game. You compound that with, I thought it was a terrible strike zone where nobody's getting anything on the corners. And so everybody's having to put everything over the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got 6 Arkansas errors, and that's the recipe for 40 runs and combined between the teams and what was it, like 35 hits and 19 walks. I mean, it was kind of just like a lot of things came together to really, you know, produce kind of a combustible type game.
Yeah, it was. We knew it was going to be like that going in. I never anticipated anything like that. I remember we got out to a 6-1 lead, and I told Phil, I said, "Well, you know, we better keep the hammer down because mm-hmm. 6 runs isn't going to win this game." And then they come back and score 6 in the top of the fourth, in the top of the third. I'm sorry.
Yeah. 3 home runs of that.
Yeah, yeah, and it just kind of from there went back and forth. What's crazy, though, you talk about that ninth inning. You know, we go into the eighth inning. I think the score is 15-11.
14-11 into the
14
eighth.
Georgia
scored one in the eighth to make it 15-11.
I don't know why I can't read the box score. I've got it right in front of me, but you're right. So 14-11, I'm thinking, okay, believe it or not, I was feeling optimistic
mm-hmm.
because we're at home. You know, the crowd, I appreciate the crowd. The crowd stayed there until that ninth inning. And I'm thinking, okay, we've made all these mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and we're still in striking distance. And we got top of the lineup coming up. I mean, just I felt pretty good. And I didn't think they had anyone in the bullpen that could shut us down. Now, we still got to shut their offense down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I still felt – maybe it's the glass half full person in me, but I felt like, hey, we're okay here. I even said it on the air. That I felt like we're okay to make that many mistakes and still be in a game against, like, a team like Georgia. I felt fairly optimistic.
Until they went crazy in the ninth inning, I thought the unearned runs were going to be the story of the game. The mm-hmm. fact that I think at that point there were five unearned runs on five errors, or and it ended up being six on six errors. It's the most errors Arkansas's – or it's tied – it's tied for the most errors Arkansas's had under Van Horn. I forget all the games where they've had it. I know there was a game in 2016, an early season non-conference game. I think there was a game against LSU down in Hoover where they had six runs, and that was the last time – or six errors, and that was the last time that they'd had six against a conference opponent. But, again – and I think it was interesting to hear Van Horn's comments after the game. The first thing was not about the pitching. It was not about the home runs. It was about the defense. I think mm-hmm. that was the thing he was most disappointed in. And, I have a hard time getting a read on this year defensively, because every time it feels like they're kind of coming back and they're kind of getting close to what I think is more in line what we expect to see from a Razorback team fielding, they'll have a game like this.
Yeah.
Think about game three at South Carolina. They had fielded so well that weekend, and then all of a sudden there's three errors in that game.
Yeah.
I guess it can kind of compound on you a little bit, but and a lot of those, one of them's a catcher's interference. It is what it is on a catcher's interference. That thing happens. But I thought it was really disappointing, the middle infield, which is where you really expect Arkansas to see or see Arkansas field well. That was where the problems laid on Saturday. And,
yeah.
You know, we talk about this all the time. There's errors, but then there's other plays that you need to make.
Yeah.
And there were a handful of those, too. It just wasn't a good day defensively.
I think that's the thing that got me, is some of the plays that we didn't make. Back to the catcher's interference, that's – so in my mind, I know the rule's a rule, but when a guy checks swing, a check swing catcher's interference – if you check swing, I don't think catcher's interference should be called.
Mm.
Because had the guy gone ahead and swung, his bat wouldn't be there. But mm-hmm. he check swung, so Ryder's glove got kind of caught up in the bat. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But if he had gone ahead and swung, that would have never happened. I don't know right there. That's a tricky one, and I don't know if that makes sense to anyone out there listening, but in my mind it makes sense, where if the guy had gone ahead and swung, Ryder's glove wouldn't have been there because the bat would have been gone mm-hmm. through the zone. But you're talking about the play up the middle infield play. You know, Kojel had a couple of low throws at first. One, I mean, they both should be caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rutenbar missed one of them. I think he stretched a little too soon. Honestly, I think the wind blew the ball,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I think it made the ball kind of blow towards the outfield side. I think he did his stretch a little too soon, and ball kind of got away from him, so he had to kind of reach across. But, you know, a couple of those plays, like Souza, there was ball hit 111 at him, and I say all the time, good infielders create their own hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bad infielders – you know, get bad hops all the time. I saw Nolan kind of on the ball hit a 111. He didn't know which way to go. Mm-hmm. I think if he drop steps one step, it's an easy play, you know, possibly a double play ball. There was another ball that he kind of booted that could have been a double play ball, run scored after that. I thought the diving play that Kojo made, great play up the middle, and then flips it to Souza. I think that caught him off guard. He wasn't mm-hmm. on the edge of the bag. He was kind of on the middle of the bag. I don't know if he anticipated the flip, but he missed that. You look at all those things, and they start to add up. But I'm going to tell you one thing that drives me crazy, and it's a difference in philosophy. I know the game's different today, but the 0-2 home runs, to me, they drive me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I know Gackle gave up an 0-2 home run. He gave up I think it was a three-run homer. 0-2, two outs, double down the line, couple more runs scored. If a guy shouldn't hit a ball over 100 miles an hour with 0-2 count, and that's just a difference in philosophy. And
explain why that is.
Well, so you want to throw – balls that look like strikes, strikes that look like balls. I say it all the time. So basically the gist of that is you get ahead with strikes, you get outs with balls. So you want a guy to chase a pitch 0-2. I know when I think of everything from the lens of me in the batter's box. When I've got an 0-2 count, I'm not taking a called third strike. So if there's the pitch that's close, I'm going to swing at it. So if you start that slider on the outer third, it breaks off the plate, there's a good chance I'm going to try to swing and try to fight it off. Maybe I miss it. Maybe I don't. A pitch that I love is an 0-2 fastball up in the zone. Or maybe you go down in the zone, then you go back up 0-2. But I'd like to see Gackle, and you and I talked about it last week, I'd still like to see him use the top of the zone. I think that opens up the zone for him. If he can just throw a couple fastballs at the top, then he can get those ground balls out on the bottom of the zone with a slider. But that's, once again, I think that's a difference in philosophy from the way I look at things versus the way. And I love Matt Hobbs. I'm not questioning anything that Matt Hobbs does or Ryder Helfrich. I did see Jackson, their catcher, multiple times get off the plate with two strikes, and they threw a lot of high fastballs with two strikes. So it's just a difference in philosophy, and it's, to me, I just don't think a ball should be hit that hard with an 0-2 count. Now, you're going to make mistakes, but I see it with Gackle a lot. I mean, I can go back and look at multiple balls hit really hard with 0-2 counts over the weekend and over the last couple of outings.
Yeah, you look at it, let's see, I had this pulled up here. It was 0-2 on Ryan Wynn, and that was a big swing in the game. I mean, I don't know if Arkansas wins if that doesn't happen, but it's 6-4 at that point. I think he's an out away from getting out of the inning.
And he can get Wynn to chase. Not many guys in that lineup will chase, but I think you can get Wynn to chase. I think that was the one that went off the batter's eye.
It was 441.
So, I mean, that's something there. Wynn swinging a couple high fastballs over the weekend. I think you elevate a fastball there, maybe. Now, I'll give Georgia credit. They do not chase a lot. They're really disciplined at the plate. Mm-hmm. But I think you can get them off the plate just a little bit, and you get them to chase up here a little bit. They swung at a few high fastballs. But, you know, that you're right. That was a big one in the game there.
Yeah, because it was 6-1 going into the inning. Jackson hits a 3-run homer. And there was a double and then a single. Okay, so at that point, and then, you know, Jackson hits a 3-run home run. So it's 6-4, but that's still manageable, I felt like, with the way Arkansas was swinging the bats. And I think that gets lost a little bit in, you know, talking about them losing and losing big. And I even asked Van Horn about it. I said, it feels kind of weird to ask you about the success of your offense when you lose by as much as you do. But, I mean, there haven't been two other games this year where they've had 14 RBI. Yeah. I mean, they were really driving in runs. I thought they were doing a good job with runners in scoring position. You know, they had 14 hits. They drew 12 walks.
Yeah.
And part of that's the umpire. I got to tell you, I did not like the strike zone on Saturday. I didn't think that umpire was very good. It's the first time I've ever seen him call a Razorback game.
Yeah.
Or an Arkansas game. From what I can tell, he's an old major league umpire. And I think what you get from those guys who fall back down to college is they are trying to call a major league strike zone to college pitchers. And you can't do that. Like, these are not – this isn't, you know, Tariq Skubal out there throwing into your strike zone. You know what I mean? This is a freshman who was playing 5A ball in Arkansas last year.
Yeah.
You gotta give them the corners a little bit more in college. And but I didn't like the there were just a lot of things. You know, like the overturn that was overturned. Well, he calls it a hit batter. Everybody, I thought, could see that that ball did not hit the batter.
Yeah.
Well, replay shows that it didn't. But then he also misses a catcher's interference right in front of him. So replay just found two mistakes that you made standing a foot away from this, if that, in one play, in one pitch. Not to mention, I thought that the strike one to Damian Ruiz, like when just about everybody came out of their seat in the ballpark, you have not been giving that pitch a strike the entire game. If you've been given that pitch a strike the entire game, then that's fine. That's your strike zone. But you're in the fifth or sixth inning, and now you're going to change your strike zone when there's a two-out at bat. You got two base runners on. I could go on and on about that umpire from Saturday. I just thought it was – and again, I think that when you have that type of strike zone – that's what allows for these type of games. That's why you have a 4 hour, whatever it was, minute game. I think that's, you know, it contributes to, that's why you have so many home runs, is you're trying to throw the ball into a bean can over the home plate.
Yeah.
Well, when you have to be that perfect and you got hitters on both sides who are able to, you know, really swing the bat against some pitchers who, you know, they're pitching in game three in a lot of cases for a reason. Boy, it was I came away. There's a lot of feelings to have after Saturday's game, but one of them was just I did not think the plate umpire was very good.
No, I didn't either. I thought both sides were yelling back and forth at him.
Mm-hmm.
If I see a pitch that's borderline, the first thing I do is look in our dugout,
because mm-hmm.
you get a feel from the reaction coming from DVH
mm-hmm.
and Nate Thompson and them. You get a pretty good feel instantly what mm-hmm. they thought about it, because without the K-zone in the booth, you know, I just kind of go off of my eyes. And I could tell the Ruiz pitch. I was like, what is that? And the reaction from Damian.
It was
horrible.
I have never seen a dugout. We're getting off track here. But I've never seen a dugout react to a pitch like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it was like, I don't know, like a gust of wind had come in and blown dirt into everybody's eyes. Because you had 40 people up on the top step. And I bet 38 of them came off the top step on that call. It was that bad.
Well, I thought the umpire showed a little bit about himself, giving a warning when
Brumbaugh
comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's a freshman that's thrown two innings all year. He ain't trying to hit a guy.
I'll tell you the other thing I don't like about umpires is when they – like if you're an umpire, this is my opinion, you let your calls stand for themselves. You don't turn around and mouth at the dugouts. Mm-hmm. And I saw that on Saturday, you know, whenever they're getting on him, he turns around and it's like, hey, man, you let your calls stand for themselves. Right. You don't need to be getting into a spat with the coaches over here, or the coaches over there. I just thought it was a poor job of umpiring.
Yeah, I did. And you think about that small zone, it can attribute to some, especially when you're talking about a team like Georgia. Look, those guys are big, strong. Did you see them during BP?
They are the best lineup I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where's the hole in that lineup?
Yeah, there's no hole.
I don't think there is one. I mean, like, you get down even into 8-9, and I'm trying to look and see who their 8-9 hitters are here. Yeah, I mean, Ishikawa, he was their 9-hole hitter on Saturday. He had 4 hits.
Yeah.
Colby Branch, that big old shortstop they got, he's their 8-hole hitter. Brennan Hudson hit 2 home runs. Ryan Wynn's their 6-hole hitter. I mean, it's as good a lineup as I've seen in a while.
Yeah, and then you got, you know, the day before, Ryan Black was their right fielder, was their 9-hole mm-hmm. hitter.
Well, I thought Trey Phelps, their leadoff guy, is as good a hitter as I've seen all year. Everybody talks about Jackson, but Phelps, like that guy can really hit.
Yeah, Lujo, him, Phelps,
mm-hmm.
Jackson, Lujo, those three, that's pretty impressive. But, yeah, you look at Phelps and you think of the old Eric Davis thing, you know, with the hands down low and mm-hmm. just he's definitely a good hitter. He's got a good feel at the plate.
Yeah.
Quick hands, really quick. His bat's quick to the zone. So
I liked about their lineup. There's a lot of talk about Georgia, and we talked with Tom about this on Thursday and how much money they spend. And but I feel like they're spending a lot of their money on pitchers, like Aoki, who came from USC. That was probably a pretty high-dollar spend for him. Certainly their guy that they got on Thursday night from Stanford. Why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden? Fulchko. You know, that was a high-dollar spend for him. I would guess that Dylan Vigeau, their number two starter from Michigan, was a pretty high-dollar spend. You look at their hitters. Like, they're coming from places like Davidson and Wofford and, you know, like some of these, you know, very similar to, I think, what Arkansas tries to do with Damian Ruiz, with the Mike Anew. And Georgia's had really, really good success. Daniel Jackson came from Wofford. They've got a couple of them from that school, and I hope I'm saying that right, in South Carolina. But, you know, they do a really good job, I think, of getting players in there. Probably – maybe put it this way. They do a good job of identifying players in the portal who are going to fit what they want to do offensively and then really getting them a lot better once they get on campus.
Well, think about it. As a hitter, wouldn't you like to hit there at Foley Field.
Where Georgia. It's like 312 down the right field line.
Yeah, as a hitter, I'd love to hit there because you look at the numbers they put up every year. You know, you look at Charlie Condren. I don't know how many home runs he ended up hitting.
Oh, like 30-something. Yeah.
Now, he's a good hitter.
Yeah.
But I haven't looked at his – last time I checked his pro numbers, he wasn't doing very well. Mm. Now, maybe he's turned it around. I don't know. But you look at some of these guys, they put up some big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it was San Bernardino. Like the guys that went out to San Bernardino and would throw up 25, 30 home runs,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the minor leagues, all of a sudden they're on the 40-man because they went out and threw up these giant numbers. And ball flies there. It's a great place to go as a hitter.
Yeah, the ball flies at Foley too.
Yeah, I mean, so if you
got a 350-foot fence down the left field line, and it's not causing too many issues for their home run numbers.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not hard to recruit, but when you bring in that many guys that are portal guys, JUCO guys, you're spending a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much they're spending, but they're spending a lot of money.
I am of the belief that Georgia's got one of the highest payrolls in the country this year. I really think that's the case. Again, and it's because of the emphasis that they put on the transfers. Like they're not signing very many players out of high school. So they're building everything through the portal. And even if you're getting a quote-unquote value guy, you're still having to pay some money for him to get him out of the portal, probably more so than you would have to pay for most high school prospects.
Well, I thought we were going to get Volchko. I thought we had him.
A lot of people thought that.
Yeah. So don't know what happened. I'm sure. Well, I do know what happened.
Well, I think LSU thought they were going to get him too.
Really?
And this is based on the reporting at the time by I think it was Pete Nakos at On Three who was reporting on this, but it felt like it was between Arkansas and LSU, and then all of a sudden there's Georgia.
Gee, I wonder what happened there. I'd like to see what the kid's driving.
Yeah, no, for sure.
There's probably a lot more to it than that, but yeah, I'm sure there. I mean, it's sad. It's sad, Matt, that's the nature of the game. But
yeah, it really is.
I don't know where you go with it. The genie can't go back in the bottle. Yeah. So there has to be something. It's just going to get worse. I think this next year is going to be even worse. Price is going to keep going up.
And that's the thing is at what point does the baseball bubble, maybe not pop is the right word, but, you know, football, their prices keep going up. Mm-hmm. And basketball, their prices keep going up. And this is the thing. Excuse me, that I hate about college sports is that all of these other sports are dependent on football and their success. You know, it's like imagine like a college model in pro sports where the Dallas Stars and the Texas Rangers and the Dallas Mavericks were all dependent, like their success was dependent on if the Cowboys were being run well, which we know that they're not really, or they were winning games. That's what kind of drives me crazy about college sports is that it's not so much about your program, your sport, as it is about the overall athletics program. Like there are a lot of things that can happen outside of your sport that can have an effect on you.
Yeah, you're right. Never really look at it that way, but you're right. But I miss the good old days where guys came to University of Arkansas because we had the best coaching, the best facilities, the best fans, best stadium, best everything. And it just feels like those days are over. People, they want a quick buck.
I think there are still players who will do that, who look at the big picture. Like I think Hunter Dietz, and I'm sure Hunter Dietz is getting paid well because he's got the type of ability that he does. And I'm sure he was paid well to come here in the first place. But I also have talked to him about, you know, why didn't you just go pro? And I can't remember exactly what he said. I wrote about it earlier this year. I'd have to find the story. But it was like he saw value in getting better in college and then moving on and, you know, like being better prepared for whenever he got to pro baseball. And so I think that there are still some players out there who are like that, who they're looking at this more big picture of where can I go and develop? Not so much where can I go and get the biggest payday? Because, I mean, in Dietz's case, I mean, let's face it, the first 2 years, they didn't go very well. And it probably would have been very easy for him to say, hey, look, I just need a change of scenery and go do something somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I still think that there are people who look at it from that viewpoint. I don't want to say that's the right viewpoint because I can't fault anybody. You know, there's a lot of college players who this is their highest earning potential they are ever going to have in their lives. Like it's certainly playing baseball, but maybe, you know, doing anything. I mean, they may leave here and become, you know, work in some sort of trade, and they're never going to be able to make X number of dollars, you know, fixing lights and plumbing or, you know, whatever the profession that they go into. So I can't say that it's right or wrong, but I still think that there are some who look at it from like maybe the bigger picture and not just the instant payday. But I do think you're right that that's becoming a lot more rare.
I think I agree. I agree partially. I think the pitchers are more out to come here for the development. Hmm. I think the position players look at it as where can I get the most money. I think they view it different. I think pitchers look at it and they're like, yeah, you know, we got Matt Hobbs. We've got the, you know, we've got that indoor. We've got all the technology that you could ever want to get better. Look at all the pitchers that have come here and up their stock.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of homegrown guys.
Yeah, you can say that about some hitters too. Mm-hmm. But it's more so on the pitching side of it. Look at some of the dudes that have come here, like a Hagen Smith, you know, or you know, Kevin Copps. I mean, Gage Wood. Wood's a perfect example. I think Zach Root too. Zach Root was a completely different pitcher when he left here than when he came here. I think they did a phenomenal job with Zach. Because when I first saw Zach, I was like, hey, he's all right. I wasn't really impressed with him. Didn't know if he's going to be a good Friday night guy. And then he turned into the man.
Aditz is going to be that's going to be the next example we're talking about whenever he's out of here.
Yeah, you're right.
He's gotten – it's hard to say he's gotten a lot better because – we didn't see him pitch the first 2 years, but he certainly upped his stock to where he's going to be a big-time draft prospect this year.
Yeah, I think so. But flip it to the position player side. I don't see position players doing it as much. Like, you might go to Georgia just so you can hit in their ballpark, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I just think – I think the position players, it's a bidding war out there, mm-hmm. and you're bidding for the – you look into the portal and, like, who – I want a fast dude with some power. Mm-hmm. Well, everyone wants that guy, you know. And I think the highest bidder gets him, unfortunately.
A lot of times. Yeah, a lot of times. Going back to the South Carolina, you know, in Arkansas they lose this game. It's one of those deals where, yeah, it was a really bad game for him on Saturday. But I think back to how South Carolina responded the next day. Mm-hmm. And there was so much that went into that, firing Paul Maneri and having Monty Lee as their interim coach. I think South Carolina, and they haven't had a good year, but they're a good example that weekend of you can bounce back from a game like this really fast. Baseball is one of those sports, maybe more so than any other sport, where it can get away from you. And it's not necessarily reflective of anything else. You know what I mean? It's unique to that one day. And I'm going to be very interested to see how Arkansas bounces back with Missouri State coming in here tomorrow night.
Well, you walked in and I was talking to Justin Acri and I said that same thing. I said, I bet you these guys would have really got back out on the field again on Sunday. For the Razorback players.
Maybe Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday night. I would have rather played too. It's a long 2 days to have to wait, but you're right, and we'll see how they respond. And you know, and I said, if something like this doesn't piss you off, you're wearing the wrong uniform in my mind.
Yeah,
you're in the wrong place because I think a loss like that has to really make you mad. But then at the same time, you learn from it, you flush it, and then you come out Tuesday foaming at the mouth, ready to beat down on somebody. And I really think Tuesday night's a big night for us.
Yeah.
It's not just RPI-wise, but it's a game we need to win.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at, you know, maybe recruiting. You can look at a lot of things, but that's a game you need to win. especially after what happened at their place.
Yeah, you look back over the last 3 weeks playing Auburn, Alabama, and Georgia, all three, you know, pretty high RPI teams, and I think they went 5-4 against them. So they've helped their when you look at the, you know, the overall picture. Tournament, it's helped. It's been helped. Like I think they're in a good spot to make the NCAA tournament. Now, things could go bad over the last month, and I may feel different in 2 or 3 weeks. They got to go to Missouri and win this series this weekend. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You need to win it. Probably need to sweep it to feel, you know, and it's hard to sweep anybody. I get it. But if you lose to Missouri even one game, I don't think that you leave there with the best taste in your mouth. But from where I'm going with that is from a tournament resume. I think the things that they can't do is they can't lose a series to Missouri, and they need to win the majority of their series here on out, or at least half of them. And you got to avoid some of these midweek losses, like those midweek losses. Missouri State's not as bad a midweek loss as say like Stetson, but. You know, you need to win. I feel like they're kind of out of the storm, so to speak, like the heaviest part of the storm.
Yeah,
you know, it's still raining. You know, Ole Miss is still coming through, and OU, and these are good teams. But now they've gotten out of this like the heavy part. You can't let your foot off the gas. You've still got to do some stuff here over the last month, and there's an opportunity. I think the schedule sets up well for them to maybe do that. But they have to play more consistently still than I think they have for the better part of the season.
Yeah, and I agree, Matt. I think look, we got Ole Miss. We go on the road to Mizzou. We should take care of business there. That's not a very good team. We got Ole Miss at home. We got OU at home, which is good. And then we finish at Kentucky. Kentucky's the one that worries me because – they're not that good a team, but they play really well in their ballpark on the turf.
Yep.
They seem to be a bit different team at home.
So it's almost like they built their team to play in that ballpark.
Absolutely. You know, I wish we had them here and maybe OU on the road. You know, I wish we could flip off that, but we can't. But I do think the schedule shakes out well for us. From now, RPI-wise, those aren't going to be as big as wins as what we had a chance to get this weekend.
I think Kentucky can still be kind of a sneaky RPI series. Vanderbilt went up there and won this weekend. I wanted to see how much Vanderbilt increased their RPI by. I forget how many. But, like their RPI actually shot up quite a bit by beating Kentucky twice in Lexington. It's kind of one of those sneaky – RPI is a weird deal.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to look at Kentucky 8-10 in the SEC, you'd say, well, that's not a very big deal. But you beat them on their ballpark with the way that the metrics work, and it's actually, you know, it can be.
Yeah, and I studied the way the metrics work the other day because I wanted to know how much – I wasn't sure of the equation of the home win versus the road win and all that. So, yeah.
A road win basically is about twice as much as a home win. And then – you know, the more you or like the higher RPI they are, then that's going to help boost you too. Like, again, beating Alabama three times in Alabama, that was just gold for Arkansas's RPI. And I think I've said this on here, not beating Missouri State in Springfield was like that was a big missed opportunity because they're a high RPI team. That would have been a road RPI or a road win over a high RPI team. That could have really, you know, helped Arkansas a lot.
And I still go back, without, you know, rehashing it too much, I go back to that loss, and I'm like, well, we had a short week. You know, we had Thursday series start, and that affected who we were able to throw at Missouri State.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a different outcome had we been able to use a couple more guys there.
And that is going to be the case again this time. I mean, you know, and you got and I guess it's different, you know, gearing up for Missouri than it is for it was Auburn that they were going to after Springfield. But it's still a consideration this week.
Yeah. Plus we had the Sunday day off. You know, you got Sunday, Monday too. So you got a few days off there. And so yeah, I think game planning for Missouri is a little different than we were game planning for
who? Missouri State is in a similar situation that it was that week where they didn't have to play till Friday. They don't have to play till Friday this time around. They go down to Louisiana Tech this weekend. So all those little things add up. I want to tell you, remind you, our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop that's been family-owned for three generations. They built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way. That kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident at H&R Tire and Auto. Looking at the first two Georgia games, we spent a long time on game three. I thought Hunter Dietz pitched well again. He gives you a lot of I think he gives it's totally changed, I think, maybe the level of comfort that you have going into game one, just with the consistency that he's been able to deliver. And it's been against, you know, three pretty good pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, look, he gave us 5 1/3. Five hits, two runs, walked one, struck out six. I mean, I thought he was good. I thought you watch some of the Georgia hitters, and they're good hitters. Mm-hmm. They took some uncomfortable swings against mm-hmm. Deeds, and it's hard to make those guys look uncomfortable, but he was able to do it. That shows you how good his stuff is.
Well, they didn't piece anything together against him. The mm-hmm. only runs they had were solo home runs.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's good to see. And I think – just having him, it's almost like a mental boost to our offense, too. Mm. You know, and by the way, I love the way we went out and approached Volchko.
You're talking the first inning where –
first inning, you know.
Kind of fake bunt.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on there. Yeah. I'm like, wow, I can't believe we're bunting Helfrich. There's no way we're bunting him here. Mm-hmm. And then I realized kind of what was going on.
Which is that they were wanting to take his mind off the plate and put it more on what was going on the bases.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess he's a guy that obviously he must not like getting bunted on, and he doesn't like he doesn't like base runners trying to steal. Kind of maybe a little bit of a head case, I don't know, but he kind of lost it there for a minute. Now he was able to get it together, and he ended up striking out like 5 out of 6 or 6 in a row.
7 out of 8.
7 out of 8.
Yeah.
There you go. The guy's got good stuff, though. Everything, like his ball cuts, mm-hmm. his fastball cuts, he's got a good slider. So everything is like going away from righties into lefties. So it's a day where lefties got to step off the plate and look to pull the ball. Righties got to stay on the ball and drive it the other way.
I thought my favorite call of the weekend, I guess, if you will, and it's part of this is I just like aggressive baseball. But when they got two on, I think nobody out in the fourth inning, they bring New up, and they, you know, put the bunt sign on, but it's a double steal. It's not dependent on him putting contact on the ball, yeah. And I love the aggressiveness there.
Yeah, I have a play that we use a lot. It's a fake bunt steal, and on our level, we're 14-year-old baseball. Yeah, you know, I even do it. I do it on Showcase with our high school kids. Just enough to distraction. To steal the base. Mm-hmm. All it needs is a little hesitation to make the play work. And I thought that was huge because I can't remember what happened next. Was sack fly next? I think didn't New hit a sack fly?
You're asking me questions here.
Yeah.
On the fly.
Anyway, the run scored.
I can find it. Keep talking for a second. Let's see here.
I know the run scored. I want to say Micah
hit
a ball.
Yeah, sack fly. Micah.
Right. Yeah, it was a ball.
Micah had
normally
a sack fly. And then also, okay, yeah, I remember this. And not only did he hit a sack fly, but he hit it to right field, which allowed Souza to tag up from second. And then he went to third and ended up scoring on Reese Robinette's RBI hit.
Yeah. So, by the way, the ball Micah hit to right would have been an absolute bomb on Saturday.
Oh, my gosh.
Might have gone over the building.
I thought maybe the biggest, I don't know if disappointment is the right word, but I just thought Arkansas would take advantage of the win more than it did. And maybe Georgia pitched to them to where, you know, they weren't able to as much. But I just thought with as many left-handed bats, especially as they had in the lineup and, you know, the ball flying out to right field the way it was, I thought that they'd probably be able to hit two or three more home runs than they did.
Yeah, we weren't able to pull the ball, get the ball pull side in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we hit, what did I say earlier, 15 balls over 100 miles an hour, we weren't able to elevate the ball. And – you know, we were squaring it up, but you know, in a day like that, you gotta,
yeah,
get that thing up.
Well, then one of the home runs, like Kozel's, I think that probably would have been gone any day, but you know, it probably got a little bump on the feet away from home plate because of the the wind. But Helfrich, I mean, he hit his, I don't know if he hit it into the wind, but he hit it to left field, and that wasn't where the ball was flying.
Yeah, that wind coming across, balls to left are kind of getting knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's baseball.
Not a whole lot of fly, but like what you're saying, like not a whole lot of fly balls to right to even kind of give yourself a chance. And Georgia, there weren't a lot of cheap home runs that they hit. But I do think, like, Jackson's first home run that he had in the first inning, that solo shot down the right field line, that looked like a fly ball to me off the bat. And I thought even the second home run that he hit, the one to center that made it a 6-4 game, I'm not sure that that gets out without the, you know, without the breeze pushing it. Everything after that felt like it was hit pretty hard, but I thought those first two were definitely wind-aided.
Yeah. So the one he hit the right was 95 miles an hour off the bat, but it was 40-degree launch angle.
Mm-hmm.
So if he'd have hit that on Friday, Rutenbar would have had to come in to catch it. You know, crazy. The same with the one to center. Mm-hmm. It wasn't over 100 miles an hour. It was like 98.
Mm-hmm.
One of the home runs was 87 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think I tracked it, and I think five of the home runs would not have been a home run on Friday, which, mm-hmm. you know, we can if and but it to death. But, I mean, it just that is what it is. But, you know, you don't want to take anything away from them, but the ballpark played really tiny on Saturday, and they took advantage of it.
Especially relative to how it played the first 2 days, because it played really big in games one and two. I felt like going out of there Friday night, after they didn't win that game Friday night, I felt like it was going to be an uphill battle for them to win the series. Just because I think we all knew, again, we all kind of had an idea of what was potentially going to come in game three. Game two felt like, to me, like the big, like, lost opportunity for Arkansas, especially after, you know, Vigue, who was off to a great start for mm-hmm. Georgia, after he went out with the cramps, and you know, they had to bring in their bullpen guy, and Aoki was phenomenal for them. But Arkansas had its chances to win that game, just couldn't get the big hit.
So this might surprise you. I was more disappointed in the Friday game. I didn't like our approach against Aoki. I thought we should have done a better job. We swung at way too many curveballs in the dirt. Now, his curveball is like a different type. It's more, at least to me, it looked more like a 12-6. Like, it was straight down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've seen a lot of that. He got behind us a bunch of times. And 2-0. 2-0 was like a changeup almost every time. I said it in the booth. I said, you almost have to sit changeup right here. You know, and I think DVH gave – I think he said in the post game he gave a couple take signs. Mm-hmm. But I think 2-0 was – I don't know that he threw a 2-0 fastball the whole game. I don't think he did. Multiple times or several times he got behind 3-0 mm-hmm. and was able to come back. But, boy, it was that curveball. He would throw that curveball up there and bounce it, or just at the bottom of the zone or in the dirt. And we just – you know, a lot of check swings, a lot of uncomfortable swings at Aoki. And I think we knew what he was going to do, Matt. I think the scouting report told us what he was going to do. And
mm-hmm.
I guess it was just something we hadn't seen before. You know, you can tip your hat and say, wow, that's a good pitch. He's got a lot of break on it. Or you can say, wow, we got to hunt that ball up a little bit and not chase that thing down in the dirt. But we kind of played his game, I felt like, instead of playing our game offensively.
Yeah, that was a disappointing loss, game two, to him. Because, again, I didn't have a good feeling about game three.
Yeah.
I even asked Van Horn about it after Friday night. I said something like, you know, hey, the conditions are really going to change tomorrow. How does that, you know, like what's that look like? I can't remember exactly how I said it, but it was about the conditions. Everybody just kind of knew, hey, this is on the horizon.
Yeah.
And I really think that was one of the reasons that there was such a, you know, push to try to get that game in on Friday night. Even when there were some delays and there was some more weather coming in, I mean, they just had a big enough window to get that game in.
Yeah,
I was driving home in a, you know, pretty heavy thunderstorm, just to give people an idea of what the weather looked like that night. I don't think anybody wanted to play two times in those conditions. Like, can you imagine 26-14? Okay, guys, we got the second game coming up in 45 minutes.
Yeah, there's no way. I was glad we got it in, but it was a weird. To me, the game two was kind of a weird night all the way around. when the starter got hurt, Vigu, and I guess it ended up just being a cramp or something, like a forearm cramp.
I think he's fine.
Which is good. You don't ever want to see a guy get hurt. But the time it took Aoki to get loose, and I get it, you get as much time as you need. But did you watch him in the bullpen? He starts out, he goes down the bullpen, he's taking his time. Mm-hmm. There's no sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. He jogs down there. He gets down on the ground and starts doing yoga stuff.
He gets to go through his whole routine.
Then he gets his pole out and does all kinds of twists and does all kinds of different things. Then he's got his plyo ball routine. He did his reverse throws, his forward throws, different angles. I want to say we were 10 minutes in at least before he even picked up a baseball. And I get it. These guys have a routine. You don't want him to rush it and get out there and get hurt. But I think what got me is there was no sense of urgency. Like, he was just taking his time. Like, you know, even when he would go to a different plyo ball, it was like sloth-like. I'm like, dude, you know, you got 10,000 people here waiting on you. Can we get it moving? And do your thing, but do it with a sense of urgency. And there was just none. Then he comes out of the bullpen and walks halfway to the mound. And I'm just, by that point, I'm about to erupt.
And then the rain started falling.
Yeah, it did.
Like, I mean, it was like, okay, you've just taken 14 minutes, and now the skies have opened up. Fortunately, it was just a brief little shower, but it felt for a little bit like that game was not going to finish.
Yeah,
just the early delay, the rain delay, and then the pitcher delay, and it was a rough one.
Yeah, I kept clicking on the storm coming in. At first, it said around 11, a little after 11, then at 11:15, they kept pushing it back. The storm kept kind of going north of us, which I was thankful for because we didn't want a rain delay. But I thought when they brought Aoki in, I thought, man, this is our chance. We're going to win this game. We're going to win this series. And it just never happened.
Yeah. Arkansas, they had their chances. Mm-hmm. They had their chances to win the series.
I mean, you look at it. We were 0-for-6 with runners in scoring position, 1-for-15 with runners on base that game.
In game 2.
Yeah,
in game 2. And it was really, and those numbers were really good in game 3. I can't remember exactly what they are off the top of my head, but you don't score 14 runs, or I think it was 14 runs. Yeah, 14 runs and have all those hits if the numbers aren't pretty good. You should be able to win a game scoring 14 runs in game 3. It's just, you know, the pitching just wasn't very good for Arkansas in that last game. And I think the pitching and the defense, all of that, you know, plays together. They just didn't make enough plays on that side of the ball.
I already told you, well, 6 runs isn't going to win it. And then I said, well, I don't think 9's going to win it. And Phil's like, well, what do you think it's going to take to win it? I said, well, 12 might win it. And then I changed that. I upgraded that to 14. I said 15. I said 15 will win it. And I was wrong across the board.
I felt bad that I gave you bad information. And you said on the radio, this is the most runs ever scored against Arkansas. Here's what happened there, was that in the media guide, it actually has I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's a segment where it's like opponent records. And it said the most runs a team had ever scored against Arkansas was 25 by Oklahoma State in 1948. Well, whoever was putting together what happens is that all the SIDs who come in, they build on the previous SID's work. So somewhere along the way, an SID forgot to update that little area that LSU had scored 27 against Arkansas in 1998. That's splitting hairs. It doesn't make you feel too much better about giving up 26 runs, but that's what happened there.
Yeah, it was a horrible moment in the broadcast.
Yeah.
Here's what stinks about it.
You're going to pull your SEC license.
People start quoting me.
Yeah.
When I say something, they quote it on X, and I don't look at it till later, but, you know, I had a bunch of people quoting me on that, and then I came back and revised it. You told me, make sure you update that.
Yep.
But, no, if that's the worst thing that happens, then it's a great night. I wish that was the worst thing that happened that night. But, that was it was good to know it wasn't the most ever.
But
I can't imagine 98 giving up 27 to LSU.
Yeah, and yeah, it is. I will say this. It was the most runs ever scored in an Arkansas game combined. There was a game, I was actually there, it was in 2010 against St. Louis on a Tuesday night, and Arkansas won the game 32-8, the 40 runs in that game, and then, of course, 40 combined, 26-14 the other day. But, like, I mean, this is one of those just statistically the most this, the most that. It's Georgia, the most home runs they've ever hit in a game. It was tied for the most home runs ever hit in a game at Baum. This is one of those that when the record book is reprinted next year for both Georgia and Arkansas, this is going to be mentioned a lot of times.
Yeah, I meant to go back and look to see how much it raised our ERA.
By 40 points.
Was it 40?
Yeah, it went from 4.01 to 4.41.
What about in conference only?
It would be a bigger number because there were fewer innings. Yeah. But
I have us at six, basically a six.
A six in conference play. I think it was about a 5 in conference play going into the series. So, probably close to a full point, which makes sense. Because there's just fewer innings to calculate in conference than there are overall.
But the overall ERA numbers, I don't remember them being this high in the conference.
No.
Auburn's leading, and they're at like the 3.5, 3.6, something like that.
Yeah. Older hitters.
And I think Tom Hart said that. There's not that Friday night. Like, usually you're used to looking at Friday night guys, and you look at those scores on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, Hagan Smith versus, Anderson from LSU, and it's a 2-1 game. You're scratching out a run, and you just don't see that.
No.
You're not seeing those performances right now. You look at even some of your guys that you expected, Liam Peterson, he hadn't been as good from Florida.
He got bumped out of the Friday role. They moved Aiden King into their Friday role now at Florida.
I didn't know that either. Yeah. But it's just like it's just crazy this year. I don't know if they changed the baseball or.
I think the baseball's been tinkered with a lot the last few years because it feels like it's flying a lot more.
Okay, so a hard hit ball is anything over 95 miles an hour. It's that way in college. It's that way in major leagues. Now I get it. These dudes are strong. Like, look at the Razorback players. Hunter Bell does a phenomenal job with them. And by the way, Georgia coming in, you see the size of those guys?
They look like Kirby Smart's B team.
You're right. That's the first team that I've looked at and thought, wow, they're bigger and more physical than us. Because I think our guys are strong.
Mm-hmm.
Even our guys that aren't big are strong.
Mm-hmm.
But I chart hard hit balls, and I don't even go off a 95 anymore. I go off 100.
Yeah.
These guys are reaching out there with one hand, hitting the ball 105 in the gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I get it. They're stronger. I know they test the bats, so the only other variable is the ball. I feel like the ball is harder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's not scientific. That's just my eyes.
It's almost to the point that if you see an exit velocity now of 94, it's like, well, he didn't get any of that.
Yeah, boy, he missed that one.
Yeah. I'll say this too about Georgia. And all three teams this year that have come through Baum, I've had this thought. I think that it's been really weird to watch Arkansas this year. It feels like there's more talent in the other dugout. And it goes back, I think, a lot of it to what we were talking about earlier. There's only so much money that you've got to buy players. But Mississippi State and Georgia, they both really invested in baseball in the last 2 or 3 years. And it's obvious. Georgia did it when Wes came in, and then Mississippi State did it when they got Brian O'Connor to come in last offseason. And Florida, Florida's one of those teams where the fact they don't have more than one national championship really just baffles me.
Yeah.
Because from a prospect standpoint, like they are always the best team. So Florida doesn't surprise me a whole lot. It's just three straight SEC teams have come in now where you ask yourself, hey, take Arkansas's starting rotation or take Arkansas's starting lineup and take the other teams too, and you take everybody and you pool them together and you say, would Arkansas have more people in the starting lineup or would Florida? Would Arkansas have more or would Mississippi State or Georgia? And I think in all three cases, you would say that, Georgia would have more players in the starting lineup. Florida would. Mississippi State would. They'd have more pitchers. Georgia, maybe not. But the other two, certainly from a starting pitching standpoint. I think Dietz, you'd put him on any of those rotations. But I think this year has got to kind of be a little bit of an eye-opener to people that you can't just say Arkansas is going to be good because Arkansas has always been good.
Yeah.
Like there got to be some people out there who have the ability to, tilt the scales, so to speak, with their wallet, say, hey, look, this is an example of teams are investing, and in order to keep up and win in baseball at at the level that people expect Arkansas to win at, there probably has to be a financial investment made in the sport, because we know at LSU, you think they're going to slow down after this season they had?
Yeah.
No. I mean, Tennessee, I don't think they're slowing down. You got to invest to win.
No, Jay Johnson said the other day he's going to do things different. He's going to start getting more homegrown players and mesh them with the portal guys. Do you believe that kind of crap?
I think they will pay more for the homegrown guys out of high school.
Right. I think you're absolutely right.
And you've got the potential work stoppage coming in Major League Baseball next year, and there's talks that in the next collective bargaining agreement, maybe high school players aren't allowed to be drafted anymore. Yeah. That's going to completely change this, I think, too, in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
That's a big thing coming down the pike that not a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah. Now it's just going to be a one-year deal, right, where they can't get drafted there out of high school, but they can go their freshman year, correct?
I don't know for sure, but I think there's going to have to be some give and take.
Like, it'll be like college basketball.
Like basketball or JUCO baseball.
Yeah, it's what I read was a proposal, but who knows? It could change before then.
They got to come to terms first.
Yeah, and they're going to limit the draft. They are going to move the draft back up, supposedly, which would be huge for college coaches. I know DBH would love that. Back to your point about players. Look, I love our guys. I have a relationship with a lot of them. It's hard for me to say this, but Georgia is – I don't say it as much about Florida and Mississippi State. But Georgia, you look at the Georgia players, it'd be hard to swap some of those positions. Mm-hmm. And I hate saying it because I love our dudes, I love our guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really big, they're strong, they're physical, they're fast. I love their approaches at the plate. I mean, I love watching good hitters hit, and they don't miss mistakes. That's the thing I notice about them.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you know, Gackle hangs an 0-2 slider; they don't miss it.
Yeah.
And it was impressive.
And they're good even where Arkansas is good. Like mm-hmm. Helfrich would probably be the player that you would say could go play for anybody. Well, mm-hmm. in order to play at Georgia, he'd have to go beat out Daniel Jackson.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe he wins the Golden Spikes this year. I think Chulowski's probably the favorite. But I think Daniel Jackson, he certainly didn't hurt his chances over the weekend. And, again, so they're good in the areas where Arkansas is best.
Yeah. I try to look where guys have holes. I think Daniel Jackson, I think you can get him out in.
Mm-hmm.
I saw his reaction on a couple pitches in, and his direction is more center, right, center. Now, I may be totally wrong. That might have just been his approach because he knew he was faced that we were going to try to get him out away. I have no idea. But I haven't seen him turn on a ball yet. Now I'm going to go back and look at some Georgia highlights. I want to see if he's turned on a ball and hit a ball to left field like he hits center field to right center. But regardless of that, the guy's a stud. I mean, he really is.
Missouri State tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Razorbacks at Baum Walker Stadium. Then they go to Missouri later this week. Can't call it the weekend because the series starts on Thursday. Once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're proudly family-owned since 1976. Trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at hnrtireandauto.com. We'll have Missouri State preview on our website this afternoon, wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you there or tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day.